huge news, years in the making, my brand new book that my publishers refuse to publish, Money Matrix. Beat the money system and build generational wealth. Understand the three main ways that the banks productize you and make money from you. You'll be able to turn that system against itself, build generational wealth and multiple streams of recurring income. It's all at moneymatrix.cash. And if you're quick, the first few hundred registrants and buyers will receive many special bonuses from me. The brand new Moneymaker Summit 3-day special event. Meet me at a champagne reception. Meet me at a multi-millionaire networking dinner. Go now, moneymatrix.cash. This is huge.
Welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast.
What does the word disruptive mean to you?
It means going beyond the ordinary, going beyond the status quo.
Not thinking in the conventional way, not just sort of following the herd.
Disruptive means shaking things up, you know?
Disruptive entrepreneur is somebody who sees the problem and embraces the problem with a new way.
Shake up, an awakening.
Quality will take care of itself, and you'll go from being disruptive, but also profitable.
When you use your own reservoir of talent, when you love what you do, then you disrupt.
Mix it up, change it up, and dominate.
And now, your host, 8 times best-selling author and double world record holder, Rob Moore.
Hello and welcome to the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast. It's producer Harry here again. So we've got Phil Spencer on the podcast today. Phil is most known for his hit TV show Location, Location, Location. So good, they named it 3 times. So Phil actually started in property in the late 80s, early 90s. He initially trained as a surveyor, and he built his portfolio up and eventually got a job on TV, hosting the biggest property show in the UK. They first recorded the very first episode back in 1999, where I would have been about 7-8 years old, which just shows how long ago that was. But Phil has been doing this for over 20 years, and it's still the biggest property TV show. Now, we recorded this before the current coronavirus outbreak, but there's a lot of property discussion and talk on this particular episode with Phil. So even though, yes, we're currently going through, unprecedented times, Rob and Phil get into some really good granular detail and discussions regarding property and what you kind of, should be doing regardless of the coronavirus anyway. So let's get straight into the episode. But before we do, we also have a YouTube channel, Official Rob Moore, where we release all the video content. So if you want to see the interview with Phil and all the other guests we've interviewed, you need to head over to Official Rob Moore on YouTube, subscribe, and start watching. So let's get straight into the interview with Location, Location, Location host Phil Spencer. But remember, if you don't risk anything, you risk everything.
Hi, it's Rob Moore here, and you may recognize this man. So we're live on Progressive Property here, my page here, The World here, maybe, YouTube here. So Phil, thanks for coming and doing the interview.
Not at all. Pleasure to be here.
This is going to go on the Disruptive Entrepreneur Podcast. I believe you're publishing it on your podcast too.
We are indeed, Move IQ.
Location, Location, Location. Is it 18 years that's been running?
It's 20, actually.
Wow.
The pilot in 1999, and I think the first show was aired in...
20 years. You need to do something big for your 20th year.
We are developing it at the moment. Yeah, unfortunately, it's got to fit into the schedule, which is the current problem.
Yeah. So that to me is wholly impressive, because I think to have a 20-year career shows longevity, sustainability, also an ability to move with the times and stay relevant.
I think I've always considered we were very lucky. Location was the first property program on telly. And I feel that we had the pick of the formats. There's been a lot of television made about property since, and some are better than others, but many of them haven't survived the course. But I do feel that we had the pick of the formats. It is an interesting process watching people go through the ups and downs of house hunting and discussing and debating and compromising or not, and looking around other houses, and then discussions on deals and negotiation and tactics. If it wasn't interesting, I wouldn't still be doing it 20 years later, and nor would people still be watching.
Mm. So if you could give us a few little secrets to enduring success. I'm fascinated by studying success, and I think it's easy to be successful for a year or two or three, but not 20. So if you think back, what are some of the things that have kept us going and relevant over those 20 years?
We have a format. And that's a really comfortable place. It took us a while to establish the format, but there is a format. Having said that, we rarely stick to it. But it's a lovely to have a fallback. If it all goes to shit, we can go back to the format. Mm. But one of the fun things about making the show and watching the show is we don't know what's going to happen. So we have to roll with the punches. You have to move with the times. And our advice is market-led. We give advice tailored to the conditions at the time. Mm. In the last kind of property whoops, when was that? 2008? There was a feeling from both Kirsty and I, and indeed from Channel 4, that, oops, how's this going to play out? Property programme and people, when it's not making people feel good. Mm. And so there was absolutely concern. But in actual fact, our ratings went up.
Right.
And we felt that was because people wanted advice. Mm. And we changed the edit, we allowed more time in the edit for our advice and tactics and real think, and a bit less of the kind of jollies and the muck around behind the scenes.
Mm. So
it's very real. It is a genuine reality TV.
Yeah.
And even the reality TV is not reality TV nowadays because it does get set up and produced. Mm. But our programmes, and not just Location, but Love It or List It as well, we don't know what's going to happen. Mm. So it genuinely is reality TV, and you get to see people make big choices. And I think that's quite engaging. Mm. People seeing people have those discussions, shouldn't we, and how much should we pay, and those, you know, it's fun.
Mm. And how long does one show take to shoot? Because it's obviously not a day, is it?
No. On Location, it takes Kirsty and I 3 days, we're there. The crew are there for 5 days and the house hunters are there for 4. But there's a good week in setup and preparation before where we absolutely cover the ground and we have a great team that does all the research. So if there is a property that week that remotely suits our client's brief, we will find it.
Yeah.
We work damn hard at getting results. Mm. We're quite careful at who we work for, with, because they need to be able to perform. They need, you know, the keener they are to buy, or should I say the more desperate they are to buy, the more we like it. Mm. Because we want to show results.
Yeah.
We want to find them homes. Mm-hmm. We want to do deals.
Great. So you said, which I think is a lovely thing to be in the presence of someone saying, that I love what I do. And I think that's a really vital element. I'm in the same fortunate position. How do you maintain the love for what you do, having done it for 20 years?
Well, that's easy, actually, because I've done it on television for 20 years, but I've actually done it in real life for 25, 26 years. Mm. and it still gives me a great buzz. I mean, genuinely a buzz to meet someone and sitting down and they go, I'm dreaming of this. I'm hoping to find that. I can't find this. I'd love to buy that. And there's a lot of hopes and ambitions involved in that, what they've got in their mind's eye. Mm. To be in a position where you can influence that and lead that, and then to be able to take somebody into the house that matches what they had in their mind, and their face flushes and their eyes go bright and the big smiles, that in itself is a huge buzz. And I never get bored of that. Mm. Seeing that in someone's face, that you have delivered on their dream. Mm. If I can then help them through the deal, save them some money, and kind of ease the process and make a stressful situation relatively calm, happy days. Mm.
So it's not just folly for TV. You are actually helping them achieve an outcome, save money, find a dream house. It's not just theatre.
No.
Yeah.
And that came because Kirsty and I did that in our professional life. We had businesses that did that. So actually the television, we got involved in the television side of what we do purely in order to demonstrate what we did. Mm. We were the only two people in the country that were doing it.
Right.
So it was very niche. Mm. But obviously appearing on Channel 4 was the opportunity to kind of demonstrate what we did to a wider audience. And as I say, that buying advice search agent role is now all over the country.
And how did it come about? Was it like a lucky phone call, or, you know, when people get invitations from the Queen and the letter came through the letterbox, or did you go hunt out being, I want to be on TV? How did
Not
it happen?
At all. No. I got a call in the office one day saying, from a production company, that had read about the service that I was providing. It was a new kind of niche market. People were unsure how it was going to pan out, but it seemed that it was working, and it was self-funding. That was my whole pitch at the beginning, was that I would save people more money than I would charge them. Mm. And if I was able to do that, the business would be a success. So I got a call from a production company saying, we see what you do. We are developing an idea following people buying property. We don't know the first thing about it. Could you come in for half an hour's consultancy just to talk to us about what we would be faced with if we went out and filmed it? So I did that, literally half an hour, went home, thought no more about it. About a month later, I got a call from the production company saying, we've developed the idea, Channel 4 love it, but we can't find a television presenter who knows anything about it. Might you come back in and do a screen test and see what happens? That's kind of how it came about. I met Kirsty on the screen test because she was the only other person doing it. And we struck it off, and 20 years later was still doing it.
Bingo. Great. So at least one question every podcast I do, I like to be ridiculously selfish and ask one purely from me. And this is that one, if you don't mind. So I have two shows currently, apparently quite far down the line with two different production companies. Okay. One of them, you know, I've had about 10 pilots done. I have done a couple of shows, but I'm used to the old pitch and the pilot and it going nowhere. Yeah. But this one, it looks like it's going somewhere pretty strong. So let's say it does come off. And it's as big as they say it will be. And it's on prime time like this, of course. The thing is, I've heard this so many times, but this one is very much further down the line than many of my others have been. For someone who's been in TV 20 years and has managed the media and managed your reputation and managed the longevity, what advice would you give to me if I'm going into this world? And this is obviously for anyone else who wants to be out there on social media. Everyone wants to be an influencer at the moment. Mm. You know, we talked before, but the cameras went on about you obviously have to choose your words, the things that you say, to be kept in context, etc. My wife does not want me to do any TV at all. She's like, she doesn't want to do it, but I've made the house really secure. I've got cameras everywhere. I've done everything that I can to make her feel safe. She does not want me to be on TV. She thinks it will ruin our life. Yeah. So you're the man to ask. How do you prepare for it? How do you manage it well?
I don't work, and I have no idea what your program is based on, but so much television is set up and scripted, and I don't work on a scripted show. So what happens, happens, and what doesn't happen can't be in the show. So it means that Kirsty and I can be very natural. So it's genuine. And I, fortunately, have never experienced any awkwardness or nastiness on the high street. I get an awful lot of people come up and want to talk, and they want to say hello, but that is only as a result that they have enjoyed watching my shows on television. Mm. The shows that we make are helpful. Mm. They help people through a potentially stressful situation. And you know, we both make quite a lot of other shows, but the core of it is positive, is helpful. And I like to think that people appreciate that, because a lot of telly isn't quite like that.
Yeah.
In terms of sort of social media, just, you know, far more about social media than I ever will. But I think genuine and honesty and straightforwardness comes through. Mm. We get fed an awful lot of, I mean, even on the high street, you know, you go into chains. There was a, when things are successful, they kind of format them, box them up and repeat them and repeat them and repeat them.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where I was going with that thought, but I don't think our programs are, and I like to think that I'm not either. Mm.
So you think the fact that it's natural, maybe the fact that it has a positive outcome?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've turned down a lot of things which I thought have been, maybe there's an ulterior motive or they've had an angle. This show is actually very positive. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure if that was remotely helpful or not.
Hey, look, any advice from someone who's been there and done it?
Well, I've been really fortunate, and I genuinely do count my lucky stars, because I do still enjoy my work. Mm. Sometimes I can do without the kind of TV stuff, because I enjoy my work. I like the filming day. It's good. I get really into it and try and get the most out of the efficiency of the day, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, at the end of the day, it's just a job, and I want to go home and not think about it. But of course, being recognised comes with, you know, there are other things that it comes with, some of which are positive and some of which are negative.
And what's the negative side of being recognised? You answer it. What's the negative side?
I always keep in mind that it is, it doesn't matter what you do for a living. If people appreciate your work, that's nice. That's great. So people that come up to me, on the whole, appreciate my work. So I would never wish to kind of, not for that not to happen, because if it didn't happen, I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
So that would be the end of it. But at the same time, you leave the house and you want to be yourself, you're in your own mindset, or you're talking with your wife or your children, or you're doing your own thing. You don't actually want to be reminded of what you do for a living five times a day.
Yeah.
It comes with the territory. So like it or do something else.
So you talked about switching off it, essentially, or that this can take up a lot of your day, and then maybe you don't want to think about being on TV. But you have a company called Raise the Roof, is that right? Of course, you're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
And you've got a family.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, there's a lot of plates there.
Yeah.
So how do you manage your own businesses, your own brand, the TV, the family?
It is quite a complex web. You're right. And I'm glad somebody appreciates it. Because I do spend a lot of time looking at my diary, trying to shift things around and give weight to things. And, you know, you never quite get everything in balance. But it's a constant juggle. Somebody once described it to me. You know, when you watch a Formula One race and you've got the helmet cam and the guy's driving. He's driving in a straight line, but he's constantly doing this. Because there's a lot at play. And I think life's a bit like that. And if you steer too far one way, you'll forget your family or your relationship or your friends. You've got to come back the other way, and then you'll drop a ball over there. So you've got to come. It's constantly like that. But to answer your question, I try and do all my travelling away from home during school term times. And that's the way I justify it to family, children, that when they're on holiday, at least I'm not travelling the country, staying in hotels. But I do have to spend a fair amount of time in hotels. In terms of Raise the Roof, yes, that is a production company that Kirsty and I have based up in Glasgow. It is probably Scotland's largest independent producer of television now.
Right.
But we have great people there who are our partners, and that's going great guns. But we don't have a day-to-day role or responsibilities. Move IQ, I'm heavily involved in and have been since the outset. But again, good people. I think surrounding myself with good people that I know, that I like, and that I can trust is absolutely key. Everything can take
place. That's definitely a commonality in every single successful person I've met, every single one. I met Arnold Schwarzenegger a few years ago and spent some good time with him. And he says, no one is self-made. No one is this self-made thing. It's a fallacy because we need great people around us. Coaches, mentors, team members, assistants. So I just wanted to sort of acknowledge the fact that, and moving on from that point, it's nice actually leading into your partnership with Kirsty.
Yeah.
Because if you're 20 years on TV with her and you're a business partner with her, I mean, I'm in a 15-year partnership with my business partner, and a lot of people in our community are looking for joint venture partnerships and property partnerships, and they're trying to forge these relationships, which they know are key. But someone who's done it for two decades, can you talk about how to maintain a good partnership, you know, for a long time?
For Kirsty and I, we want it to work. We are friends. We got to know one another through this, and you know, we've become friends. I spoke to her twice today. there's a lot of professional respect, and there has been from day one. We bring different things to the relationship. And I couldn't do some of the things that she does, and she couldn't do some of the things that I do. So we are very mindful. We are better together than apart. We're both pushing in the same direction. People have described it as a marriage, and it kind of is, because we're committed to it. We want it to work. And perhaps naively, but I do believe if people in any kind of a relationship, business or personal, if two people genuinely want it to work, we'll make it work. And find a way. You need to be able to rely on each other.
Yeah.
And we all have off days and bad days and low days, and we all have high days and good days and great days. And, you know, you've got to find a way to make it work. Kirsty and I have been incredibly lucky to find each other. And actually, seeing as you asked, I think 20 years on and our relationship, our partnership is stronger than ever.
This is an emotional part, isn't it?
We appreciate
you are moving me, Phil.
We've been through a lot together.
Well, I'd say that about my business partner. You know, obviously, you do go through a lot together. Have you ever had a massive blazing row?
I think Kirsty's recorded it at about 8.
Oh, really?
She does keep...
That's not bad, though.
In 20 years, that's not
one
bad.
One every 2.5 years. That's pretty good.
But the great thing is...
She knows the date, the time.
We do now know not to have a big discussion when one of us is tired or hungry.
There you go. The people do not put enough weight on the primal needs of humans. Mm. And I meet a lot of entrepreneurs who are hustling away, and then they burn themselves out, and then they get angry and upset or give up because they're fatigued emotionally and energetically. And, you know, there's a lot of this movement now about mental well-being and self-care. And I really buy into that because I like whoever has a massive argument when you're happy and grateful and you're making loads of money and everything's going well. That'd be no one. You just let things go, don't you?
Yeah, it's very true. Mm,
but it takes self-awareness, I think, to go, ooh.
Probably not the
feel
time,
is
probably.
Not approachable at the moment. Yeah, yeah. Or, oh, wait a minute, I can tell I'm getting emotional here.
Kirsty is great because she can blow up. It takes me a while to blow up, but if I blow, it's probably for a good reason. I would say it's for a good reason.
Yeah, but it's a proper blow, is it?
But she can let all things fly, but it's gone in 5 minutes. And then we're back. Okay, so let's move on. And I have learned not to sulk. So we can have a row, move on.
I think that ability.
Clearly, yeah. We're still partners. We're still friends. Let's just find a way. Let's go on with it. Back to the topic.
And was there any way you had to change your behaviour? And if I could just give you some context here. So in my early partnership with my business partner, and I think he would say something similar, we were very different as well, and that was helpful. But because we were very different, some of the things he did I couldn't understand and would frustrate me and vice versa.
Yeah.
And I think at times him and I were trying to make each other more like us.
Yes.
Trying to, you know, influence him to be more like me because my way is right and vice versa. And then I remember this day, it was a year into our relationship when I just thought, you know what? What I like about Mark is his completely unique difference to me. So stop trying to turn him more into me and just let him be how great he is. And if I don't agree with that, that's fine. And when I did that, I think it really helped our partnership.
I'd second that completely. Mm. Absolutely. Kirsty and I know each other incredibly well now, so we can read each other. And I know to get the best out of her, I've got to let her do her thing in her way, and then we get the... She can create absolute TV gold. We tackle it very differently. When we're actually working on camera, I'll tend to be the person that will get us in the right place, get the conversation to where we need to go and the kind of story thread, but she'll produce magic and TV gold out of nowhere.
Thank you. Yeah.
But actually that can spin people's heads. But
when you say TV magic, what's something magic in your show?
Something out of the ordinary happens.
Right.
And we need a bit of funnies. You know, it needs to be a lively, entertaining watch. And she's a very funny person to spend time with. So if you give her the flexibility, the room to do that, it happens.
Do you have a funniest moment?
No, not really.
No. Is that because you've had a lot, or you just can't remember them?
Well, we have had a lot. Yeah. We have had a lot. And in the early days, Channel 4 used to edit that out.
Oh.
And edit in all the property advice and tactics and kind of serious stuff. But actually, as time went on, it gradually started to edit more in of us larking around, taking the mick out of each other.
Hi, it's Rob here, interrupting you with something you may not know about me. I was one of the few people on the planet hand-selected by Facebook to pilot their new supporter program. It's a very small premium model where you can get exclusive content and advance notice or discount of new products and services. So this is what I've done for you. Not only can you get best discounts
for any training that we might run. Not only do you get notified first of any launches we do, we also do supporter meetups, supporter dinners, supporter WhatsApp groups where you have a deeper community. I do supporter only Ask Me Anythings. I do supporter only content and podcasts. We have a community of 2,500 supporters, and I'd love to give you the chance to be one of those. I believe this is the best supporter program in the whole world. Find me a better one, but I don't think you will. So the link is bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R. That's bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R. I believe the gap between free content and paid content is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's a lot of free content out there that's maybe not that good. And for just a few dollars a month, you can get the best content on business, on entrepreneurship, on starting up, on scaling up, on sales, on marketing, on the mindset of being an entrepreneur. So go to bit.ly/RobSupporter with a capital R right now.
Probably the funniest moment that I can think of right now has never been transmitted, and it was on the pilot, and it was to do with the discussion of what the program was going to be called, because the original plan was to call it The Great House Hunt. This is a closed network. The original plan was it was going to be called A Great House Hunt. The thing is, any sentence that contains the word hunt that's going to be performed in front of an audience or a camera at some point's going to go wrong. And she got it wrong the first time.
Did she? And she dropped the bomb.
My name's Kirsty Allsop. Welcome to the Great House.
Oh, no.
What actually made it funnier was that she didn't know what she'd said.
Right.
So she just carried on, and I was on the pavement. I was on the pavement rolling around laughing. So it was decided to rename the program.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that footage does exist somewhere.
Right.
I think it haunts her.
Maybe on her retirement.
Maybe on our 20 years.
Yes. There must be some great outtakes.
In our 10th year celebration, they did an outtake program. And Kirsty and I were quite nervous about it because it was a program where we had no idea what was going to be on the telly that night. And it's which we saw ourselves get 10 years older inside 40 minutes.
Yeah. Arguably, surreal. Yeah.
Well, harder for Kirsty because some fashion has changed and hair changes and pregnancy and breastfeeding and skirt length, you know, all changed. I just wear the same old blue suit. Yeah. No great difficulty for me. but yes, there were, Channel 4 did do a program of outtakes, and it was funny. I think my deciding the kind of funny bit, there were lots of us being very stupid and falling over and getting an awful lot of things wrong. Kirsty had been struggling to get this piece to camera right. She was getting it wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong. It was quite long. And finally she got to the last couple of words, and a lorry, a white van went past. Went, "Oi, Kirsty, love you, poop, poop." And she turned around and went, "Will you fuck off?" She really gave it some. And it was so kind of out of character for what people would assume was Kirsty. That was very good.
Are you into property actively yourself? Do you buy stuff? Yes. Do you renovate stuff? Do you flip stuff? Do you invest in stuff?
Yes, more buy-to-let portfolio. I have literally just finished a month ago renovating and extending another house. That's quite fun. Fortunately, I have a wife who's very capable at managing that process.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I don't think I won't be buying any more at the moment. Ooh. Although money's cheap, I think that's
money
interesting.
Money is very cheap.
I've just remortgaged some of them, and I'm astounded at the 5-year fixed deals that I've got. Really astounded.
But why are you thinking about not buying for a little while?
I'm just going to see what happens. I'm quite happy where I am in terms of kind of debt and value.
Yeah.
They're all let. They're all happy. I'm just going to see what happens.
So which one's progressive? Is it this one?
Yeah.
So there's 27,000 hungry buy-to-let investors in this group. So for those that are just getting in and haven't got the luxury of 25 years experience for you and maybe might want to buy now, because I think we all know a recession is coming. I don't think anyone knows when, although plenty of people will pretend that they do. But if it's 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, is it not a little bit of time to maybe fill your boots before it? Or are you waiting for it to be the contrarian investor?
This is a good question. The availability of credit, of good credit, has never been better. and can only get worse. So on the one hand, fill your boots, buy as much as you can and get into it. But on the other hand, I just don't feel that yields are that exciting at the moment. It depends. Mm. Are you buying for the yield or are you buying for the capital growth? Mm. Capital growth, long term, I look at this country as an island. We've got an increasing population. We have got a housing shortage. If you look at the numbers of people in relation to the numbers of property, it doesn't stack up.
Yeah.
Then you add in the fact that people leave home earlier, get married later, divorce, and live longer. That's a major issue. Then long term, demand is only going to rise and therefore prices will increase.
Mm-hmm.
Add to which rental prices have been going up. Add to which you've got the stamp duty and add to which deposits required by first-time buyers and what have you has also gone up. So I think you've got an increasing number of people that want to rent, but because of the tax changes on investors, actually there's less investor-owned properties, which is really interesting. So less investor-owned properties, less for tenants to choose from, up go the rents. It's a really, that's why it's a fascinating market to be involved in, because it is complex.
Yeah.
There's so many variables. Mm. I haven't got the answers, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all turns out.
All right, great. So do you have a memorable achievement, something in your life where you go, that makes me feel really good?
I am proud that I trained as a surveyor. I never actually practiced surveying. But I am proud of the fact that I recognised an opportunity in the housing market, and that the fact that it was biased against the person spending the money. People at this time, they're talking 1996, I think, people were going into the estate agent thinking they were about to be provided with a service, biggest sum of money they ever spent. They're not being provided with a service at all. It was the vendor that was being provided with the service who was paying the bill. And I believe that was an unfair situation, and I set about trying to kind of level the playing field. So I am proud of recognising that opportunity, being told countless times by people in the market, that'll never work, no one will pay you to do that.
How did that make you feel? Did that make you just want to go and do it even more?
I was absolutely convinced there was a market. And nowadays, there are hundreds of buying agents. Of course. It's fairly commonplace.
Yeah.
So I'm proud of recognising that opportunity. I don't have that many talents, but surrounding myself with good people is one, and recognising opportunities is another. I do come across lots of different business-type opportunities to get involved, this, that, and the other. The vast majority may be interesting, but not right time, or not. I mean, I picked a few, and so far they've turned out good. So, I think part of being an entrepreneur is recognizing an opportunity for what it is and then taking advantage of it.
Okay.
You've got to take some risk, take some gambles, you've got to work hard and sort of find your angles and move with the times. Certainly, experiences of the Move IQ team, it's a new technology business. We're not imitating anyone. When we set up Raise the Roof, the production company, there's lots of production companies. We know where the business was going to come from. You know, you can copy, you can think, you can plan, you can strategize. That's what production companies do. But in terms of the Move IQ, property advice on the internet, we're not following anyone. We're making it up. And we've got to move with the times and find where the income streams are. And it's not necessarily where we first thought they are. So it's recognizing those and kind of seeking out the best opportunities.
And you talked about risk there. And most people who might fit the profile of an entrepreneur actually like that, as opposed to get scared by it. And is that you? You like an untested market. You like being a bit disruptive. You like doing something that they tell you can't do, or there's no one to copy.
I don't know. I've never really thought of it. I mean, maybe I do. I think I've quite an independent mind. It's difficult because it's quite comforting doing something that, I guess for me, that's the production company. It's quite comforting. I know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that's, as long as you keep doing it well and doing more of it and doing it better, that's quite comforting. Whereas technology business in new ground is quite exciting. Mm. It's quite fun. We can make a difference. Perhaps that's a trait of an entrepreneur, is wanting to make a difference.
Mm. Okay, so one more question, then we've got some quick fire ones coming. We've got the cheeky round and the disruptive round. All right, so we talked about good moments there. I think it's nice because people tend to get good value. If there's any struggle, is there anything you struggled with in your 20 or 30 years or a low moment that you did wrestle with, but then maybe you defeated it or it changed your outlook or something?
I had a low moment in 2008 where I had developed a home finding business. We'd got 30 people. We were turning over 4 million quid. We had 4 offices, I think. And we had invested the sort of 18 months leading up until Lehman Brothers went down. Mm. I remember that day so vividly. Yeah. We'd spent the previous 18 months investing heavily in business development to get ourselves in the position where we got enough business developers and contacts and relationships to kind of feed the funnel. And of course, Lehman Brothers went down and the funnel shut off. So 18 months of investment kind of disappeared up in smoke.
Really?
And I had thought at the time, if in business, if things got difficult, you can just turn it off. But of course, you can't just make people redundant. You can't just pay a tax bill. You can't just walk out of an office. You've got responsibilities. Mm. And that was a bit of a wake up, but it takes a long time to wind things down.
Right.
It was scary.
Mm.
And I'd put some personal guarantees to a bank.
Right.
And I had to settle those. Mm. I won't be doing that again.
Mm. Mm, I just signed a big PG about a week ago, didn't I? Yeah. All right. Yeah. Why have you got a podcast? Why you want to be in that world?
So MoveIQ is a technology property advice business that I set up 2 years ago. And it came out of the idea. I had a property business sort of 2000 I set up, which was property buying advice. It was a search agency, and it was the first of its kind. It has subsequently been much copied, and there's loads and loads of search agents now. But I always believed at some point technology would enable me to give a much wider number of people good property advice. It's a complicated procedure when you're buying or renting or, you know, moving. It's not something people do very often, and it's fraught with difficulties and challenges and questions and you know, unknowns. So my concept behind MoveIQ was to try and help people through that, help consumers through the minefield that can be that is moving.
And when you say technology is used, does that mean it's on an app, online?
It's online. The technology side of it is a very clever algorithm which we built to give people information about the property as and when they see it. I've never met anyone who has changed their mind on whether to buy or not to buy a property based on the local search. And at the time they get the local searches, they're a month down the process, they're in for lawyers' fees, surveyors' fees, the change bill, everybody's emotionally involved. And I've never met anyone who's changed their mind on the back of that. But all of that information exists. It exists now. So I wanted to produce something that would enable somebody to view a property, go home, sat around the kitchen table at night, discussing, should we buy it, shouldn't we buy it, how much should we offer? All the information exists. So with the algorithm, you can press the button, you pay your £17.99, and it spits out a 45-page report on that specific property. So it really is very clever going out into the World Wide Web and identifying all of the issues. Not just about the house and pictures of the house and the floor plans and the marketing history, but the neighbours and who lives there and how much they paid for it and how long they've lived there.
Right.
Class sizes and distance to schools and local amenities and crime rates and just a vast amount of information. Both positive and negative. So it really is, it's a factual account of the property that you're considering buying. So people can, I believe, with the benefit of that property report, make a confident decision.
Right. Is it residential or buy-to-let or both?
It's residential.
Right.
It doesn't apply to new build properties. Buy-to-let is a different market because I think there are lots of, you know, that's about the maths rather than the more emotional purchase.
Mm. Okay. So one more thing about tech, and then that will lead us to talk about why you did your podcast. And that is, do you think that like the conveyancing process, the property buying process, is a little bit outdated and slow and laborious? And isn't it a joy when your solicitor's on holiday for the whole of August when you want to buy a house and people are talking about blockchain and all this new tech? Let's have a little bit of a dream into the future. Is this going to happen? Are we going to be able to speed the purchasing process up? What do you think?
It's a really interesting one, Rob, because everyone talks about it and everyone seems to have an ambition to speed it up. And I really don't see why it's not possible.
But it's not happening, is it?
But it's not happening. Yeah. And why isn't that happening? And I ponder that. And I'm left worried that some people in the chain of events aren't quite as motivated to see the change happen.
Mm.
Where that is, perhaps that's up for discussion.
Yeah.
But the Law Society, as an example, say they're behind it, but actually, can they get the members to make any proper changes to the system? It's frustrating for everyone.
Mm.
And I mean, I don't need to tell you, but momentum is the crucial thing in a property deal. If you get momentum and keep everybody concentrating on the deal and they keep it moving forward. Yeah. But the moment you slow it down, everyone starts looking left and right, getting distracted, and then personal situations come in. Somebody loses their job and somebody, you know, the world starts to get a bit messy when 30% of deals don't come together.
That's a lot.
It's a huge number.
I can see why maybe the Law Society, if one was to be marginally sceptical, wouldn't necessarily want to be behind it. They might feel it's a threat to their whole industry. that was one of those. Yeah, I like your diplomacy there. Maybe it takes like an Uber-type founder, because obviously Uber were very disruptive and aggressive and just went in and shook things up. Maybe it takes someone with that kind of ambition and drive and desire.
Well, you've got to get everybody involved. You've got to get the solicitors, the banks, the brokers, the agents, the consumers. Everybody's got to be behind it. And I believe that everyone's pushing in the same direction. Everybody wants it.
Mm.
It's just there's a lot of bodies to try and coerce to do the same thing at the same time. And I think that's proved quite difficult.
That's such a good point, because you see all these new technologies come out and you think, oh, surely in 5 years it's all going to be changed. Like, for example, VR. Surely sometime in the future you're not going to really need to view a property. If VR is brilliant, you can just view it from your headset at home, job done.
Mm.
But it takes a lot longer. You think it's going to happen and then it's like 10, 15, 20 years. I mean, I'm sure battery-powered cars aren't new.
Mm.
We're still not all driving them, are we?
We've been talking about this, the paperless deal.
Ooh.
Again, I mean, as my example of the property report, the information exists. The information to enable a property to transact it exists. It's all there.
Mm.
So can it be collated and brought together quickly?
Yeah.
You know, one would hope it can.
Mm.
Two solicitors in the same room with the right information, you can make an offer on a property at breakfast time, you can complete that deal, or you could exchange on that deal by lunchtime. It's possible.
Mm.
It might cost you a bit more money, but it is possible. So you take that forward a step or two, and it's not beyond the realms of possibility that can happen quickly.
All right, well, watch this space. So you have a podcast, which is linked to this business of yours. Let's talk about podcasting, because it's quite a new thing, really. I love podcasting. Podcasting's really changed my business, my brand, and my life. And it was just something I did purely as a little bit of fun, because I've got enough property to not have to work too hard. How's the experience been for you, and why'd you do it?
I've actually really enjoyed it. And if I sound surprised, that's probably because I was quite surprised. I spend a lot of my working life in front of a camera.
Mm.
And that gets edited and produced to a certain extent. Although, I mean, I do have some element of control over what goes in because I'm involved in the production companies. However, it's a lot of time in front of a camera. As much as I enjoy it, I found it really fun to sit down and have a chat with someone one-to-one. Yeah, there's other people watching and listening, but it felt a lot more intimate.
Mm. And is there a sort of a personal brand?
Yes, exactly. For MoveIQ, we're trying to generate as much content as possible.
Mm.
And it seems to be working well.
Mm.
Yeah.
We have one normal round we do, the disruptive round, and we've introduced this new round called the cheeky round. I'm moving in more gently to ask cheeky questions, basically. And I put them in a little box. I caveat them in case we fall out or you don't like me.
So
and
you're
I
just excusing yourself.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Because this is actually important for me to say that when I do podcasts, because we've done, what, nearly 500 episodes now? When I do interviews like this and discussions, I want you to go away going, I really enjoyed that. You know, we had a good time. So I'm not the sort of interview that tries to catch people out or ask hard questions.
You're just softening me up. So you're trying to catch me out with the next
question. I think I'm just softening myself up. And we started to take a few more risks, and actually our audience really love them. So I did a Google search.
You've really done the business.
So I did a Google search, and is Kirsty married to Phil? Comes up with 27,000 searches. So there's 27,000 people
really
in a very short...
I've asked that question.
Yeah, as are you married to Kirsty? So my question to you is, if you weren't married to your wife, would you marry Kirsty?
She once described that in an interview as incest.
Oh, really? Ah, so that's the relationship. How did that make you feel?
Fine.
Yeah.
And she is... like a sister, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
No, we're not each other's type, if you want the honest opinion.
I do want the honest opinion.
Well, okay, I'll take the words out of Kirsty's mouth, because this is what she said. Yeah. My wife is tall and blonde. That's not Kirsty.
Right. Okay. That was a... I feel good about getting that one out there.
there are reasons why. I think when we first started making the programme, we do get on, and people... perhaps aren't used to seeing that platonic friendship on television. Mm. And there was a lot of stuff in the press that Phil and Kirsty together and blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, you're either together or you hate one another. So then there was stuff about, oh, no, they hate one another. They don't even speak, despite the fact that we just written a book together. So it was kind of, the press has always been interested in that. We didn't help ourselves, or I didn't help ourselves. It was 2 years ago, I think. I could come up with a number of similar examples, but so we travel around, we stay in hotels, we move around trains, planes, and what have you. I'd come down, we'd agreed to meet in reception of a hotel in the Midlands somewhere, 8:30. I was down there, 8:30. She was nowhere to be seen. Not an unusual circumstance. So she calls me, I'm stood by reception. Darling, I've locked myself out of my room. Can you get a key and come up? That's fine. So I got the key from the reception, left my bag at reception, went up in the lift to Kirsty's room. There she was, stood outside of the room. Let her into the room. We both went in. She brushed her teeth, finished packing. We both came out. I, being the gentleman, wheeled her bag. We walked down the corridor. So now, two people have just left one hotel room with one bag. Walked down the corridor, and there was somebody sort of doing this. We got in the lift. People said, morning, Bill, Kirsty. Went down to reception, she was checking out, and more people. And then I thought, oh, shit, what have we done? And that ended up in the press, that we had both walked out of the same hotel room with one bag.
Ooh.
So we probably don't help ourselves.
Do you feel like milking it a bit with the press, teasing them? Or do you just...
No, I think we're beyond that.
Yeah. Okay, right, next one. What's the weirdest thing you've seen inside a house or viewing a house or buying a house? And are you going to tell us the one you said before the cameras were on?
No, I'm not going to tell you that one.
Sorry. I shouldn't have. That's cheeky of me. I'm sorry. This is the cheeky round.
Okay, well, I mean, that one, a camera was put... So we're filming, the cameraman put his camera on the floor, which was actually looking at what was under the bed. And the director was looking through, oh my God, what's that? And it was something that no one would wish to see, but it was hidden under a bed.
So think about what you might normally put under a bed.
Boy, I don't know about you, Rob.
I see what you did there. Turn it on me.
I have walked in, and I was with a client, early one morning, I mean, not that early, 9 o'clock in the morning, walked into a house, we'd got the keys. And there was a chap coming down the stairs in his dressing gown. Oh, God, sorry, forgot you were coming. Wife had a baby last night. And she really had a baby, and her waters had broken on the living room floor, and they'd rushed to hospital.
Wow.
And then he'd come back at whatever time, gone straight to bed, hadn't cleaned up the mess. That was something I won't forget.
All right, then. So this is the disruptive round. You can answer as quick as you like, or take your time. So what's the best advice you've ever received?
My dad said to me, and it's always stuck with me, that an awful lot can go wrong in the world if you own the roof over your head. Shit can happen. But actually, if you own the roof over your head, it can only affect you to a certain extent. So he said, concentrate on that. Mm. And I've done that.
Great. What's the worst advice you ever received?
You know, we've talked about the importance of surrounding yourself with good people. And listening is a great skill. And I believe that I'm a good listener. And I do try and filter out. But I am surrounded by good people. I'm really not sure that I've had bad advice. Or if I have, then I've ignored it. I try and take my decisions in life carefully and with all the information. I do like a lot of information and all the detail, and then I can sift through and try and make my decisions. So there are things that I've regretted not doing. But
like investing in Apple shares 25 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. There have been a couple of those.
Yeah. you've had early chances with some big companies.
Yes, Zoopla.
Ah.
Yeah.
Did you like bin it? Like, oh, that's not going to work.
I didn't take it very seriously. I sat with Alex Chesterman when there was five of them in the company. Mm. And he said, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. Would you like some stock? We could do it. And I did actually work with them, but I never took the stock. He sold it for $1 billion. That was a mistake.
Yeah. Should put some whiskey in there. Is there one thing that you strongly believe is kind of wrong in the world that maybe you'd like to change or see change? And it can be anything.
Nothing that immediately comes to mind.
Nothing that upsets you, gets under your skin, presses your buttons.
I'm a pretty gentle-natured guy, to be honest. Not too much stresses me out or worries me. I mean, it's each to their own. Crack on, don't affect me.
Yeah.
But you do what you need to do in your life as long as it doesn't affect me. I think we all get a bit frustrated with the nanny state nowadays, and that seems to be a situation that's increasing rather than decreasing. But, life continues.
Mm. Okay. And is there one person that you think, if you were watching or listening to this podcast, you would love to see as a guest? Like, if you could have the dream interview that you could watch as a fan yourself, who would that be?
Does it have to be a disruptive entrepreneur?
It can be anyone you like. No. It can be anyone you like.
It'd be my boyhood hero.
It can. It can, yeah. I want to know who this is now. Your boyhood hero.
My boyhood hero was Ian Botham. Ian Botham. And he's a hero of mine for many reasons, not just his kind of exploits on the cricket field. I'm a big cricketer. I play cricket, I watch cricket, and I collect scrapbooks on Ian Botham. Yeah. I've met him twice. I didn't know what to say at all. I couldn't speak to him.
Yeah.
But I love what he stands for, how he goes about life, his charitable work, his business work. So he is someone that infinitely listenable to.
Yeah.
He's quite contentious. He says it the way it is. I'd love to hear him speak.
Yeah, he'd be great. We're trying to get Kevin Peterson on the show. He's probably my favourite modern. I mean, I played county cricket, my hero. Yeah.
Before?
Cambridgeshire.
Okay. I played Kent.
Yeah. Well, your county is bigger than my county, but it's still a county.
Yeah.
But yeah, and Graham Gooch. Okay. I modelled his high back lift, holding up the bat.
206, what a score it was.
Yeah, 333 was his top score. Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Peterson, though, isn't he? Box office. He'd be great. All right. Loads of podcasts ask, what advice would you give your 20-year-old self to go back and impart the wisdom that you've gained? And I'm reversing this question and seeing if it gets some good answers. What advice would you give your 75-year-old self if you could go forward?
Ooh, slightly scrambling my brain there, Rob. I don't know if I'm kind of thinking this in the way that you've asked it, but it is clear to me that a lot of life's success, whether that's in business or family or friendships or general sort of success in all areas of life, comes down to health. And if you aren't healthy, and you don't look after yourself, then a lot of those other things become much, much harder to achieve. So keeping a mind on that, I think, would do.
So still be alive.
Yes, you've got to still be alive.
Well, Warren Buffett talks a lot about his health and his age as the ability to be doing what he does for so long. That's a big part of his success.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that can be taken for granted, can't it?
Well, it can. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be healthy. But it is very delicate and it can be taken away like
yeah.
that. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs get very busy and very focused yes. and very committed and they work hard and blah, blah, blah. But actually, we need a bit of time for ourselves and to look after the mind and the body.
Yeah.
If you do that, the chances are increased, certainly not guaranteed, but increased, you might get to 75. And if you get to 75, well, that's probably about time. If everything's gone well, you can knock it on the head and travel the world and go fishing.
All right. So this podcast is called The Disruptive Entrepreneur. We interview a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of disruptors and just generally fun and interesting people. What does the word disruptive mean to you?
I think somebody who just thinks about things in a different way, got an independent mindset, and is prepared to do something about it. I was going to say stick the neck out on the line, but that's probably a bit too much. But see a different way. Don't follow the herd. Have another look around it.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, totally. I completely get it. I think it's really, you've said it twice, risk. Take a little bit more risk.
But but in order to take that risk in a kind of sensible manner, you've got to analyse the detail.
Mm.
And you've got to think that through and think every eventuality through. That's not easy. Mm. And there's a lot of luck involved as well.
Mm. So let's do a shout out for your show and your social media to my listeners and followers. Where can we follow you if we want to see, you know, what you post online on social media and give us the name of your podcast?
It's called Move IQ, and there's a YouTube channel, there's a podcast, and there's a website. So please do find us and subscribe.
All right. And this has been The Disruptive Entrepreneur. So if you're into being disruptive or hearing from great entrepreneurs, then we're on most channels, aren't we? YouTube, social media, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. I won't list them all. Stitcher and Spotify are going up for us, aren't they? Quite a lot. Yeah. You've got to be on voice now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Siri, play Move IQ by Phil Spencer. That's where we've. That's the future, I think.
Oh, it's gone. It's gone.
Phil, thank you very much.
Nice to meet you,
it's been
Rob.
Fun. Good thank you. To you. Cheers.
I can't believe that worked.